It's finally here. Stop into Menards for amazing Black Friday deals. A 54-inch giant snow tube is only $9.99 each. Ladies' slippers are just $6.99 a pair. And a men's heated jacket is $49.99. Ah, there's so many great Black Friday deals. I can't list them all. You'll have to hurry to Menards while supplies last to get these and many more Black Friday deals. Sale good Black Friday through December 1st. See Menards.com for details.
Save big money at
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You know who you are?
Steven is my name. Even Steven.
Will you say something, Steven?
Steven or else media.
You're listening to the Superman Super Show, episode number 7, Superman Joins the Circus. Hello and welcome to an all-new episode of the Superman Super Show. I'm a host. My name is Steven. And 1,000 miles over there to my right is another host, Mr. Ed Moore.
Howdy.
Howdy, Ed. How you been?
I have been just peachy keen, as they say in the country.
Do they? I mean, I live rural. I guess I do hear that now and again.
I live in the South, and I'm not really sure, honestly, that I've ever looked somebody in the eyeball when they said peachy keen. So I don't know if it exists or not, but yeah. It, you know, it's quaint and it sounds kind of Southern, and, you know, so I go with that.
So this is the point in the show that we have in our official show notes. This is the point where we're supposed to banter.
Yeah.
I have been toying with the idea of maybe eventually making that like an official segment with music and everything that I can put
banter.
In. Now it's time for banter. And then we just, so what's the weather like over there? Yeah.
That would
really
just,
boring banter.
That would be rife with for a Monty Python lead in.
Yes. I do actually have something today, though. And if you don't mind me selling myself for just a small moment.
Banter away, sir. Mm.
So, for those who may not be in the know, they're back a long time ago. In my, I refer to it as my previous life. I used to be a musician in the 90s, and just recently, I am old. I mean, I'm not as old as you, but I am old.
close enough to.
We're close. Yeah, we're very.
That's arguable.
We're just a couple years apart, I believe. But I mean, I'm reaching the end of my first half century upon the earth, and I think you've already crossed that line.
Right? I'm journeying forth.
Yeah, you're already moving on forward.
I am. Yeah.
Yeah. So I had been talking with some of the guys that I used to be in this band with called Larry, and we had back in the day between 93 and 96, we had recorded 3 different demos. And of course, the purpose of a demo back then was to make tons of copies and send them to clubs in a press kit to try to get gigs. But then we also sold them. We put them out on cassette tape, and you got somebody sneaking up behind you.
Yeah. You're right.
Thank you. The call is coming from within the house. But we all have digital copies of all 9 of these songs from back then. Somebody at some point was able to digitize their tapes, and I just asked them the other day. I said, hey, do you guys mind if I put all these together like in one collection and then just throw them up there on all the streaming services like Apple Music and Spotify and all those places? And they're like, yeah, go for it. So So I did that. I made a little album cover. It's called All Inclusive. And as of today, you can find it on Apple Music, and you can find it on Spotify and Amazon Music and YouTube Music. And I'm sure it's other places. I have found that it's also on, like, if you go into Instagram and you add a song to one of your stories, it's there. Those songs are there. You can find them there and add them to your stories. So I think that's kind of neat. But I'll put a link in the show notes if anybody is in any way interested. Doing that then also made me want to do the same thing with the band I was in previous, which was Trinity X. And so that stuff's coming up slowly as well. So, yeah. Where's my bit of banter?
Cool bean.
For this episode.
Yeah. See, I don't have anything cool like that. In the 90s, 86 to 91, I was in college, and until 94, I was in graduate school. Yeah. So, see, I didn't. Although, I will say I did have a child in 95. So that,
yeah.
I can use the rest of the 90s. I can use my first son as my excuse why I didn't have a band then. So,
well, I mean, here's what I'll tell you about me being in a band in the 90s. I didn't go to college because I was going to be a rock star, right? That okay. was the goal. That was the plan. And in high school, I would even have, like, my guidance counselor would take me aside and be like, well, let's talk about preparing for college. And I said, I'm not going to go to college. I'm going to be a rock star. That's the plan. And he says, well, but you got to have a backup. And I said, oh, if you got a backup, you're just setting yourself up for failure.
There you go. That's, yep.
And here I am, not a rock star. So, and I'm not, I don't care. I'm not bitter. I don't sit on the couch and go, if only.
Boo hoo hoo.
And it's funny because, of course, the moment that I started talking to these guys in the band again recently and then asking, hey, you guys care if I put this stuff up? Of course, immediately two of them are like, well, we should get back together and we'll do some reunion shows. And I'm just like, whoa, slow down now.
it's not like, where I'm at.
Yeah, I don't. First of all, I don't even have a drum set, and I don't know if you've ever priced one of those, but they're friggin' expensive. You know, if I got enough money, if I had that kind of money lying around, I'd buy a car. That's all I'm saying at this point.
There you go. Priority. That's family. Yeah.
Yeah. So now yeah, I was will my. Ask,
do you still have a practice pad and a set of sticks?
No.
So you haven't done any of that in a while.
No, recently, the way we all kind of reconnected, because one of the guys had moved away. He had moved up east. He was over in Virginia. Ooh. And he recently came back to town, and two of the other guys, they had gotten together, and they were kind of jamming together and stuff. And because they're all still, you know, they're, one of them's married, and two of them are married, and one has kids, and blah blah blah. But they all still play, and they're in various bands, and they go out and they play clubs and all this stuff. And it's never been you know, at one point I just kind of it wasn't fun anymore, and that was the whole reason I started playing, because it was fun. And once it stopped being fun, I just stopped doing it. But they got together one night. They were getting together to jam, and one of them had reached out to me and said, hey, what are you doing tonight? You should come by. And I usually they all know me pretty well. They're like, he's not going to come over, because, yeah, I don't go out and do stuff. I'm very close to being agoraphobic. You know, I just don't like going out. I just don't like going out and doing stuff. It's just not my thing anymore. And but I decided, you know what? I think I will come by and just hang out for a bit. And,
cool.
He said, well, don't tell the other guys. We're going to surprise them. And, went in there, hung out with them for a bit. I actually sat down behind the drum set, and we played part of a song. First time I'd played in maybe 10,
wow. 11,
12, 13 years or something. And it wasn't perfect, but, you know, it was almost like riding a bike. I have a video of it over on my Stephen R. Orr YouTube channel. Big fat guy behind a drum set. You know, it's you know, if I had all the time on my hands and I had enough money to have a drum set, I probably would be playing again at this point, but not in any kind of serious capacity. We have two viewers.
That's all cool. There we go. That's what I meant to say.
It's totally cool. It's totally cool. All right. So today, are we done with the banter? Is the banter segment?
I think I am banter filled. Yes.
Here ends the Superman Super Show banter segment. Now on to the next segment, in which we talk about a little story called Superman Joins the Circus. This appeared in Action Comics number 7. It was written by Jerry Siegel. Pencils on this story was by Wayne Boring. Inks by Wayne Boring and Paul Loretta. The letterer was Paul Loretta, and our editor was Vincent Sullivan. This is the first time we've really done credits so far in the show, because basically up to this point, I think we had an extra inker in issue 6, but really everything has just been Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. Right. And I will talk a bit about that when we get into, once we're done with the synopsis, because I think it's fairly obvious with this, starting with this issue, that there seems to be a bigger team working on these stories.
And I am not the most critical of comic book readers, but for these stories, I did start to notice some differences, at the very least, in choices that were made as far as how the panels were set up.
Yeah.
I wasn't necessarily able to tell, you know, this brush stroke and this line stroke and that kind of thing. But I could tell that the frame of reference and the camera angles are starting to be a little different from what they were the first, you know, 2, 3, 4 issues.
Yeah. And really with this issue, again, we'll talk about it more once we get through the summary, but it was a very, very different look as far as the way the panels were set up compared to what we had before. And I feel like I kind of have an idea of maybe why that is, but we'll talk about that here in a bit. So Action Comics number 7 was, of course, published by DC Comics, and it has a cover date of December 1938. So here's what happened. Clark Kent is being ribbed by fellow Daily Star employee Curly before his boss assigns him to interview the owner of the Jordan Circus. When he arrives, he overhears an argument between Mr. Jordan and Derek Niles. Mr. Jordan owes Niles money, and he only has two options: come up with the money or take Niles on as a partner. Unfortunately, the first option is unlikely. The Jordan Circus is playing to mostly empty crowds. Clark Kent decides that what his circus needs is Superman. As Superman, he approaches Mr. Jordan and offers to be his strong man. After several feats of superhuman strength, Jordan hires him. The next day, Derek Niles and Lois Lane both see the circus's ads with Superman in them. They both head off to the circus, where they see the packed crowds. The crowd demands to see Superman, and he gives them a show. Derek Niles, suddenly seeing his plan of getting control of the circus going up in smoke, plans for some accidents to befall circus performers and customers. Lois Lane, meanwhile, is trying to get into Superman's dressing room. That just sounds funny.
Is that a euphemism?
That's what it sounds like. Okay. But no, she's literally trying to get into it.
Literally. Gotcha.
Yeah. After being refused at the front door, she attempts to sneak in, where she comes across Trigger, the man hired by Niles to perform some accidents. He subdues her and then takes her to Mr. Niles. At the next show, the accidents start to happen. The lion gets loose, the trapeze shatters, the tent pole breaks, and each time Superman saves the day. He notices Trigger trying to leave and forces him to tell him what he knows. Superman speeds toward Niles' office in order to save Lois Lane. When he gets there, Niles faints from fright. Both he and Trigger are put in jail, and the Jordan Circus is saved. Clark Kent returns to the Daily Star to once again get picked on by Curly. Later, when Curly is in a room, someone reaches in and tears off all his clothes, much to his embarrassment. That synopsis, by the way, was taken from DCFandom.com, and the link will be in the show notes. Ed, what did you think?
There was a lot that happened in that, 13 pages of story.
Yep.
Superman, okay, well, we'll get there, but I'll go ahead and say that, you know, I don't appreciate what Superman did to that circus wagon. I think it was entirely unnecessary.
I agree. It's like, let me show you that I'm a strong man, and just destroys the poor man's wagon who's already struggling for money.
Yeah. And these three issues that we have already looked at and hopefully we'll talk about tonight, this is just the beginning of this stage, shall we say, in Superman's career.
Yeah. Superman like, jerk.
Something. I don't know. He's like, well, I'm big and strong and nobody can stop me. So, that's almost what it feels like. It's like, but you're the good guy. You're not supposed to act that way. That's not. He started out pretty early. What is this? The seventh appearance of his, and he's it's gone to his head, you know?
Yeah.
He believes he's Superman, and boy, he is starting to act that way.
Yeah. He's starting to become, it's like he's a bully, but he's trying to direct it towards doing good, and he doesn't always get it right.
It's like he has this dark side that we're now starting to see, because we're watching him more. So all eyes are on him, and he there's nowhere for him to go and be like the bad boy. We see him do it now.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, man. Yeah.
So I'll say that the first thing I noticed as I started reading this, and I think we alluded to it a bit before we started recording, maybe, but the panel layout is not wildly different than the previous issues, but it's way more structured. It seems like almost like a computer spit out a template, and they just filled in those panels, because literally every page, I don't want to say literally because I can't confirm it right off the top of my head, but I feel like every page of the story was an 8-panel grid, 2x2, lined up perfectly with, just perpendicular, just two columns of 4 panels.
Except for the first had the splash panel, and the last, which had the little ad.
Yeah.
In the lower right hand corner. You're absolutely right. They were all straight up 8-panel pages.
And the lines that created the panels were a bit thin compared to even the next issue. Now we do have a different penciler this time around, so maybe that's a big part of the reason.
Maybe, but you would think, we don't know what the process is. We don't know how much freedom to fill the panel the artist is given at this point. So it appears that the artist must be given quite a bit of freedom, or at the very least, Siegel has not adapted to directing things more.
Yeah.
Without Schuster there. I'm sure they were a little bit more simpatico than Siegel and, whomever else is partially or fully arting, if that's a word, these later issues. Again, we don't know exactly how much is one artist and how much is the other, but then there's also the matter of inking, how much is one or the other, or potentially a third person so it's like, but definitely at the very least you can see that artistically something has changed.
Yeah. And I have a theory. I don't know if it holds any water, but the one thing that we do know based off of what little bit of research I did before we started the whole podcast, and we talked about a bit in episode one, is that before that first Superman story appeared in Action Comics, Siegel and Schuster were trying to get a deal with the newspapers to syndicate a Superman strip. And it feels, or it seems as if they had already worked up a few strips. I mean, you think they would have just for the fact that they're trying to sell them. So they got to show what they can do. And the first issue, the first story is almost fairly obvious that they took these strips that they created that literally were meant to be, 3 or 4 panels across that were going to go into various daily newspapers for the next week or so. And they cobbled them together and created that first 13-page story for Action Comics #1. And I have to wonder if maybe for the first at least five issues, because I do think by issue six, we do start to see the structure changing up just a bit, getting a little bit more, well, structured, more comic booky, more befitting to a regular sized comic book page. And so I wonder if by the time we got, they got to issue number six, they had everything beforehand was either all taken up by the strips that they had created previously to try to woo a deal out of these newspapers, or partial, you know, they were using partial strips and adding more stuff to create these full stories. And then by issue six, and of course here, issue number seven, it's just all created specifically for the comic, and it's why it feels a little bit more, feels a little bit less like they were putting it together in their garage and more like they're in the offices of DC Comics putting the book together, you know.
Not that there's anything wrong with
right
recording art in your garage, as I'm sure Stephen can attest to. So
yes,
all art has its place.
That's right.
We're not putting down the garage.
Some great stuff has come out of garages, literally. So yeah, that's, I mean, that's just that, it, that is just a theory, but it
could be. I mean, you know, you've got a lot of support, visually in, you know, three, four, five issues of a certain technique, a certain style, and then it starts to vary a little bit. And then in this one, it has varied enough that we notice it enough to want to say something. So,
yep. And we get some of the same in the next couple of issues, except they have started to move, you know, the panels. They're not just straight two columns of four panels. I mean, they're the columns, but the panels shift. So they somewhat overlap each other. Each panel's not the same width, basically.
And right.
Every panel on most of these pages, they're all the same rectangular shape and width. Inside.
Yeah, this issue, it's very precise. You could probably take a ruler and they would be the same width and length all the way through for the pages that there are eight.
Yeah. And did you notice his boots?
Yes, they're yeller.
That, I find that really curious, considering that we are reading of course, reprints. And I have to assume it's not a coloring mistake of the reprint. Why would they do that? They would catch that these days
to maintain it as to what it was, I would hope.
Exactly, that's what I'm thinking as well.
Yeah, I
for some reason. Yeah.
Well, and to me, that is always something that I don't necessarily like about a lot of modern reprints of not modern comic books. The difference in the paper is one thing,
mm-hmm.
and the difference in the inking, the coloring, but also the corrections, and I'm throwing up, you know, mm-hmm. that will be, and I'm like, but that's not, if your purpose is to present what was, then just leave it. We are smart enough to understand that, oh, well, you know, it used to be this color, this style, this length, this whatever, and now it's not. And over, you know, 40, 50, 60 years, perfect example, Batman's cape and cowl. Is there one thing on a comic character that has changed more than Batman's cape?
Right.
And with the recent passing of Neil Adams, that comes to mind just for me immediately, because he was one of the first people to draw that I am familiar with, the like eight times the size of the man cape. Billowing, and blowing, and trailing, and you know all this stuff. Whereas other people, you know, early in Batman, he had this little like a you know a half cape, like a little kid's Halloween cape.
Yep.
You know, so and if that's the way it is, and you are reprinting those stories, then keep it the same. Just do that.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes you know I'll use the if you've seen recent copies of Walt Simonson's Thor run. They've recolored it.
Ooh.
And it doesn't quite work. It just doesn't quite work. And I guess I get why they tried it. but it doesn't work.
Well, the 80s newsprint books are what I cut my teeth on, really, when I really became a reader collector. And so that is my preferred look. You know, and I know that virtually everything I pick up nowadays is not like that. Everything I pick up new, you know, is not like that. But that's fine. I can go here behind me on the other side of this wall, bust open a box, and get all of the books that are on that 80s newsprint that I want if I want to sit down and read those. So,
the Superman Super Show will return after these messages.
It's finally here. Stop into Menards for amazing Black Friday deals. A 54-inch giant snow tube is only $9.99 each. Ladies slippers are just $6.99 a pair. And a men's heated jacket is $49.99. Ah, there's so many great Black Friday deals. I can't list them all. You'll have to hurry to Menards while supplies last to get these and many more Black Friday deals. Sale good Black Friday through December 1st. See Menards.com for details. Save big money
at At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And now back to the Superman Super Show.
See, the way you said that, I picture you going in there with like a freaking baseball bat and whacking the box apart to your comics.
I normally have a pocket knife here with me, but yeah, they're in the other room.
You got to bust that box open.
Bust open.
So I want to talk about the art just a little bit because I rather liked it. I rather like Wayne's style here. It's a lot more detailed as far as what's in the backgrounds and you know what's going on around Clark and Superman. And there's actually a moment I'm scrolling through right now when we talk about Lois trying to get into Superman's dressing room.
She's and crawling on the ground.
Yeah, the panel where she's crawling under the tent, and it's. All you have of her in that panel is just her posterior and her legs sticking out from underneath this tent. But you really get a sense of her wriggling and struggling to get under this tent just from that one little panel. And I thought that was really well done.
Yep. A lot of shadow there, multiple layers because she's got a coat on over her dress and, shoes and grass and everything is there that you would see. There's nothing left that you assume is also there. Everything is illustrated that would typically be in that situation, I think.
Yeah. I'm also rather curious about this Mr. Niles, his motivation behind wanting to become a partner in this circus, because I was waiting for him to maybe say at one point that he was going to use it as a front to, smuggle goods or run arms or something like that. Because otherwise, why is he so excited and why is he so willing to break the law to become a partner in a failing circus?
Right.
And he wants to make it fail more so Mr. Jordan can't pay him his money so that he can become a partner to what? Who yearns? It's like, I can't wait to become a partner in this circus. That's where all the money is. You know, I don't understand his motivation.
I don't know.
It's,
but I do have in mind that other media that I've consumed from this era, that is a frequently used method to acquire, businesses is that some money bags wants to force someone's business to be so bad that they can scoop it up. And I'm like, well, but you've ruined the business. So what are you going to do with it? How does that benefit you if they're not just trying to get rid of the business?
Yeah, they get it just to sell it. And
yeah, yeah. But I mean, if you want to get it to use it and you've ruined it, well, how exactly are you going to use it now that you've ruined it? What?
Yeah. And there's so much happening in this story. They don't really have time to get into his motivation. So it's almost they want us as the reader to just, he just wants it because he's a bad guy. That's, you know, he's just a bad guy doing bad things. And so here's a way for him to be bad, you know, is by becoming a partner in this circus, which obviously Mr. Jordan doesn't want. So that's his motivation. He just wants to do something to piss people off. He's a bad guy. That's what bad people
now,
do.
Speaking of bad people doing bad things, let's take a moment and discuss what they did to poor Crax.
Poor Crax.
Crax. C-R-A-X. Crax. That's the name of the guard dog for the circus.
Yeah.
He comes up against Niles's step fetch it dude here, which they
Trigger.
Gave name. Trigger. That's right.
Trigger.
His name is Trigger. And this is the same dude, actually, when Lois is trying to sneak into the through the previously mentioned back under portion of the tent to where she believes Superman is going to be. Trigger scoops her up. Okay, so first of all, he snags the woman.
Yep.
And he is none too polite or gentle about it. Okay, so you already know he's a bad guy. Okay.
Yes.
Well, first of all, he was doing the dirty work, so he's a bad guy. Well, now he's roughing up the dames. Okay. Well, that's, you know, times however many. Then, okay, Crax comes around doing his job and encounters Trigger doing something on however many levels that he's not supposed to be, somewhere that he is not supposed to be. So Crax attempts to do what he is supposed to do, but before he can, Trigger kicks him. Okay. He doesn't just kick him. He punts him like a football.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, we have in the panel here a Crax flying through the air backwards from where he got kicked under the jaw or in the, you know, lower chest area there, lifted off the ground. And yeah, so now I will go ahead and spoil it and tell you that Crax does recover. He does show up later on in the story. So he's good, does. Probably a little sore, a little bruised up, but unfortunately he doesn't get to get his pound of flesh that he's owed. Which is unfortunate. But yeah, so manhandling the dames and kicking dogs. Okay. Trigger's bad, man. He's got to go.
He's not a good guy. Now he does kind of get his with Superman's interrogation technique is really kind of funny.
Yeah.
Made me think of one of those paddle balls with the rubber band.
Okay.
That's basically what he did. He just tossed him way up in the air and then caught him and then tossed him up in the air again until Trigger would talk.
But yeah, it's interesting over the course of seven issues, how we have seen things progress. The bad guys get for poor verb choice, badder.
Yeah.
Superman gets harsher in dealing with the badder guys. Things are just tracking in an upward way, I guess, that things are starting to be more amplified. Whereas in the first couple issues, you know, there was good and there was bad and there was Superman and, you know, everybody was kind of on just a medium to low key. But now things are just starting to be not necessarily extreme, as we all know. That doesn't happen until the 90s when things get extreme.
Right.
But they're more so. There's less even keeledness or less ambiguity about things. That the sides of your good guy bad guy are further separated. It seems each story.
Yeah, yeah, and something that I just thought of, and I brought it up over on the forum, and if you're not a member of the forum, you really need to be forum.justanotherfanboy.com. Link will be in the show notes. And it's something that every time I edit one of these episodes, I think about, and I think I should have said this, but we talk about how these stories are crazy. That, you know, these just crazy stories, crazy stuff's happening all the time. And the one thing you always hear people talk about who read older books is how crazy, when you think of crazy stories, your mind goes to the Silver Age. The Silver Age is supposed to be just full of this, just these wacky, right, crazy stories. I think what makes these stories just a bit crazier over the Silver Age is that the Silver Age stories were supposed to be crazy. I mean, you create a guy from another dimension whose sole purpose is to come in and recreate reality to drive Superman crazy, you know, just to mess with him. That's supposed to be crazy. You create this red kryptonite so that all kinds of weird, you can have an issue where Superman has fins, you know, it's just weird stuff like that. Right. The craziness that happens in these issues are more like, it's just supposed to be what happens in this day and age. You know, this is how people act, and it's just crazy the way people act.
It's acceptable.
Exactly.
Saying and doing these things was okay. And that's what makes it crazy. In the Silver Age, you know, they were trying to be, let's do something weird with an alien or with an undersea creature. You know, they were trying to be whatever it was. Here, they're making up stories.
They're supposed to be down to earth stories is the thing.
People will be entertained by this, so it's okay. You know, we don't have to get extreme about anything. Just, you know, toss bad guys up and catch the falling trapeze person right before she hits the ground, and catch the big center pole for the circus before it falls. And, you know, well, you have to draw that, so it looks kind of crazy.
I mean, well, let's think back to the issue where Superman plays football, and the fact that he needed to get on this football team so he could stop this coach from the other football team from doing nefarious things, right? So he needed to go undercover. So I guess the most obvious way to do that was to kidnap one of the team members, drug him, tie him to his bed, and keep him sedated while he stole his identity and became him for a little while.
Right.
That, to them, was normal. That was a normal thing for Superman to do. And that's
how somebody would do it. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what makes these stories crazy. So we didn't talk about this beforehand. We don't officially do anything like let's choose our favorite panel from the issue kind of thing. But I have a favorite panel from this issue I want to talk about real quick.
Okay.
And the nice thing about these is now that they're actually numbering every panel, it's easier to point out some of these panels. So this is panel number 74, and it's when Lois is trying to get into Superman's dressing room. And we have an usher, basically, who's got this red jacket and these blue gloves and this white sky cap type thing, and his answer to Lois, because we don't see he's the only one with dialogue in that panel. There's nothing beforehand that suggests she said anything to him. He's just suddenly going, "Sorry, Superman ain't seeing no one. Get moving." And the way his thumb is pointing, you can just see him just get moving. You know, he's a jerk.
Yep.
And he's super rude. And, you know, maybe he's just spent the last hour after the circus trying to keep people out of Superman's room. And maybe that's made him angry. But I just love that. That's my favorite panel of this issue.
And you mentioned that, and that brings to mind the next panel, 75.
Yes.
That may be the most attractive Lois Lane that we have seen drawn yet.
Yeah, that's a very nice Lois Lane.
That's a very nice picture. Yeah.
And it also, her plan, if I were to conceal myself in his dressing room tonight, I'd catch him when he reported to work in the morning.
Hmm. Yeah. Okay.
And we were not truly, I mean, we are given her motivation here at this point doesn't seem to be, I need to get some kind of scoop, some kind of story about Superman. It's more about, because when she discovers that Superman is going to be there, I'm trying to find that particular panel, because I think there's something that she says that makes me laugh. She says, Oh, she just, no, it's not this one then. Superman in person, here I come. I think one of the issues she calls him. Oh, there it is. 57 on the next page. I'm going to see him again. Superman, my dream lover. Oh, why don't they hurry? And she's clasping her hands in front of her.
Right. It's rather dramatic.
Charlie Brown is sitting there almost behind her, standing up and waving. That kid looks like Charlie Brown. I'm also really impressed by the crowd. There's a few images here, a few panels of the crowd and just the various faces and, you know, the different shapes. And just there's a really crazy looking kid in panel 53 in the corner of that panel.
It's just got a shock of hair and looks like maybe two teeth. But he's far older than that. He's probably 7, 8, 9 years old.
Yeah. But was really impressed with the art in this one. I thought Wayne Boring is anything but.
Let's also give Schuster a hand for dropping the word pestiferous. Okay.
Ooh, where does he do that?
How about preparatory? Pestiferous. Oh, I didn't write down where it occurs, but it's a narration caption. I do remember that.
He does tend to once or twice in an issue, he throws in one of those $10 words.
He refers to, or the reference is made to Lois of being a sob sister.
Yeah, I had to look that up. Tell us what that means.
I did too. Wikipedia, no, yes, Wikipedia tells us that sob sister was an American term in the early 20th century for reporters, usually women, who specialized in newspaper articles often called sob stories. We know that phrase. We hear that all the time. With an emphasis on the human interest angle using language of sentimentality.
Yeah.
So that was a sob sister. And there's a reference to Lois being that for this particular newspaper.
Yep. That was, I thought maybe at first they lettered it wrong. It's like, what is that? Doesn't make any sense, but I looked it up. Yeah.
It's
interesting.
It dates what you're reading, that a word like that, a term like that is used. And I look for things like that to see if what I'm reading is dated in some way by anything more than the visuals. You know, a lot of times the visuals will give things away, but, words like referring to a woman as a moll, M-O-L-L. That's one of my favorite ones that I look for when I see 20s and 30s mob kind of writings and stuff. But yeah. So sob's sister really stood out. Now I will be looking for more one-off phrases and things like that as I read. Since I've seen one, I know well that it won't be the only time they do it. So
as soon as I saw that and looked it up and saw that it was a term used back then, I immediately thought of you. I said, Ed's going to write this down. And cause you, there have been in a couple of episodes, you've talked about the looking for that kind of stuff, the language of the time, you know, cause I remember one episode you specifically mentioned that we haven't seen a lot of that yet.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah. The last thing I want to say about this, about this story, this issue is, the very last page, I think, really is a good example of defining how much happens in one of these stories and how quickly they just pack everything in and they just zip through it all. And because literally from you got 8 panels here, and in 8 panels, Superman tortures Trigger to get information out of him. He learns that Lois Lane is being held captive by this guy, Niles. He runs to the place where Niles is holding her.
Good running panel, by the way.
Yes, very good running panel.
he is moving fast in that panel.
A blurred streak of motion. So it says he leaps into the window. Niles shoots at him, does nothing. He tells him the bullets are as harmless to me as peas. He doesn't even have to lay a hand on Niles. He quickly faints, and then Superman's back out the window. Lois is like, he fainted away from sheer fright. Wait, I want to thank you for saving my life. Some other time, he says as he's leaping out the window. And then he's back at work where Curly is pulling his tie out of his suit again. And then we get Superman. We have to assume it's Superman reaching in from another room and jerking the clothes off of Curly to the embarrassment of others. All of that. All of that happens in one page.
Mm-hmm.
And it's as you read these, there's not really slow moments, but there were moments in this issue where, as I'm kind of reading along, I'm like, okay, they're spending a lot of time building up the fact that Superman, why Superman is going to join the circus, what he's going to do joining the circus. And then they introduce this whole, Trigger comes to the circus to create accidents. And they're just at one point, I'm just like, good Lord, how are they going to close this sucker out? Cause we're nearing the end, and they do it all in that one page. They resolve every storyline in this issue in that one page.
Yep.
Eight panels. And yeah. And it's literally just bing, bang, 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 boom, boom, boom. And then that's it.
Yeah, what do they call it now when they stretch storylines out? Decompress,
yeah.
This is
very compressed storytelling.
Very. I mean, just from the like panel 7 to panel 8, we get, I don't know, 6 to 8 to 10 hours.
Yeah.
Difference there, because one is one night and the next panel is the next day at work. So whatever that interval is.
Yeah, this last page could easily be one issue of a comic today, possibly even two.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's not hyperbole. I mean, I could totally see you give that bit of plot to freaking Brian Michael Bendis.
And
he'll turn it into two or three issues easily.
Yep.
I got, you know, I got nothing against Bendis, but it's like reading a Bendis comic book is like watching a Kevin Smith movie. There are times when you're just like, all right, you're just trying to be too clever with the dialogue. You're just trying too hard at this point.
Can we move?
Yeah. Do we have to have somebody, you know, whenever I've been trying to read his Justice League that are, you know, I'm 6 months behind doing it on the app. And so I've been trying to read his Justice League and it's all right. But there are so many scenes with all the members of the Justice League talking about something. And it's like, can we have one of these group conversations without always inserting these dumb little joke comments from various characters and some that make sense coming from some characters and don't make a lot of sense coming from other characters. It's like just these weird little, I don't know. We're not here to complain about Brian. If we're still reading Superman comics and doing this podcast, when he starts doing Superman,
we'll
talk about it.
We'll get to his part later.
All right. Anything else you want to say about this issue?
No, sir. I think that's everything that caught my eye.
I like the fact that they you know, created a character, this guy Curly, who I believe I'm gonna go to the DC fandom page for this. This is his, they don't even have him listed. Oh no, this is a different issue. This is his only appearance. He will never show up in another comic. So he was literally created just to show that Clark has to put up with crap like that. And that after a while, Clark Kent has a line.
Yeah. He's like, okay.
Yeah. All right. Let me close this sucker out then. I want to thank everyone for listening to this episode of the Superman Super Show. If you want to drop us a line, you can do that I'm going to read the email here, folks. Settle down. TheSupermanSuperShow@gmail.com. And if you want to help us in any way, you can go rate us on Apple Podcasts, or if your podcaster app of choice has a rating system, go and rate the episode. But really, truly, if you want to help us, send us all your money. That's a joke. Just tell your friends about us. Pass it around, basically. That's all we ask. Tell your friends. Don't tell your dog. I mean, you can tell your dog, but that's kind of weird. Dogs don't have thumbs, and the earbuds are always falling out of their ears. They don't really stay in quite well. Don't kick your dog.
Don't kick your dog.
For cracks.
Amen. Solidarity.
So until next week, my name is Steven, and I'm going to say goodbye. Goodbye. And there's Ed, and Ed's going to say goodbye.
Goodbye.
See you later.
We want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Superman Super Show. Questions and comments can be directed to the Superman Super Show at gmail.com. If you enjoyed the show, you can help to boost our presence online by leaving a rating or review on your favorite podcast app. The Superman Super Show is a presentation of Steven or Else Media. For more nerdy content just like this, check out stevenorelse.com or just use the link in your show notes. Superman is a registered trademark of DC Comics and was created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster.
Superman is a copyrighted feature appearing in Action Comics magazine.
Superman's bad. I mean, he was bad.
It's finally here. Stop into Menards for amazing Black Friday deals. A 54-inch giant snow tube is only $9.99 each. Ladies' slippers are just $6.99 a pair. And a men's heated jacket is $49.99. Ah, there's so many great Black Friday deals. I can't list them all. You'll have to hurry to Menards while supplies last to get these and many more Black Friday deals. Sale good Black Friday through December 1st. See Menards.com for details.
Save big money at
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.